Brother and I asked the young people to sit in the front row, and I'm glad that some of them did, because I want to speak to them. Jeremy, no. But you know what makes our faith in God special is the two salvations. The two salvations is what makes our faith in God special, and understanding the mercy and loving kindness of God, to see the manifestation of His love and power and justice and mercy on the world of mankind. But sometimes it comes through struggle, and we're going through a great time of struggle. Can you not hear me very well? Oh, a little bit like that. But anyway, that's what makes us unique. Now, the struggle that we all go through, what I've endeavored to do in this session is to open up the story of Joseph so that all of you folks can see your life reflected in it. Now, some of you, like Brother Homer, are in the autumn of your life, and some of you, like you, are in the springtime of your life. But what I would like you to see is the sprightliness and the cheerfulness of Joseph, and how you can arrange your life in the context of God, in the mercy and power of God, and live under His protection. We call it sanctification. Now, that's a fancy word for being developed under the power of God. And sanctification is more what God does for us than what we do for God. I like Brother David Stein's definition of sanctification. It's 90% what God does and 10% what we do. But so far, we've taken a look at four different stages of Joseph's life. We began at the seat of promise at the beginning, and that's when Joseph's story begins with dreams, and those dreams symbolize our God's promises that we enjoy in our life. They point to the vision of His kingdom on earth for all mankind. They point to His vision of His kingdom in the heavens that will be the ecclesiastical ruling powers for the world of mankind. Those dreams that Joseph had equate to the prophecies that we understand from the scriptures. So with that, all your efforts, get knowledge of the scriptures. That's the big story behind Joseph. And God's kingdom and understanding God's kingdom will give you the foretaste and the hope of the development of the Abrahamic promise. So step number two is when God sent Joseph to his testing ground. He went on a mission for his father, and he entered God's testing ground. Now, sometimes you will find yourself in a testing ground where you have to try to bring all of the promises of God and all of the development that you've done, the learning that you've done, and you have to bring it to bear to get through your life, to go on the next step of your Christian journey. And that's a testing ground. Now, Joseph was sent on a testing ground. He went on a mission from his father, who asked him to go check on his brothers. And that request made him enter that testing ground that God sent him on. And believe it or not, he would not see his father again for at least another 22 years. Well, step number three is where he had to wrestle with injustice. And you too will find that you will have to wrestle with injustice. You can't escape it. It happens, because that's what happens in the world that we live. But what I'm going to ask you to do is to trust in God's justice and trust in God's justice for you, that He's got a plan for you and He's pulling you through it. He's knocking on the door of your heart and He's asking you to open it up, and He promises to come in and feed you and then enjoy the fruit of the Spirit that you enjoy. We can find that in Revelation chapter 3. But Joseph wrestles with injustice. You know, he was accused unjustly of assault. He was falsely imprisoned. And that mirrors our struggles with unfairness. Man, I've had some really interesting experiences with unfairness. But what it was his response? His response was that he maintained his integrity and he maintained his trust in God despite adversity. And I think that Joseph came to the point in his life where he didn't really care what anybody thought of him. Wow. He came to that point. And until we come to that point, we'll still have one foot with a rope around it that people want to pull us into another room. But we need to stay in God's room under His sanctifying power. And then step number four is when he was guided by faith. And he was imprisoned on false charges, but he shined his light on those prisoners that he was with. And he learned invaluable things for his job as Pharaoh's number two. In prison, he was in the king's prison, and he learned from the administrators that were in prison from the king's kingdom. He was put over them in authority, and I'm sure he just walked up to each one and said, okay, tell me your story. And that's what God wants you to do in prayer. He wants you to tell him your story. Tell him what you're concerned about. Tell him what you're afraid of. Tell him what your hopes are. Tell him that you're wrestling with this promise that he gave and why it's taken so long, like Brother Brian and Brother Jonathan spoke about. Joseph was guided by faith, and he learned that everything that happened to Joseph was good and directed by God. And until you get to that point, you will not enjoy God's peace. So now we're at step number five, which is where he learns how to have a servant's heart. You know, we all understand some of these things, but God gives us an experience where we can walk through the door into another place where he brings us and directs us and trains us in righteousness. Not that we're righteous, but he trains us in righteousness. And that's really hard because we have to use the principles of righteousness in a wicked world. So in this case, we find it in Genesis chapter 41, verses 1 through 57. Genesis 41, chapter 1 through 50, verses 1 through 57. In this case, Joseph rose to power in Egypt. And he rose to power by interpreting Pharaoh's dreams. Pharaoh had two disturbing dreams. Dream one was that seven healthy cows were devoured by seven sickly cows and were not any fatter. And the dream number two were seven healthy ears of grain are swallowed by seven thin, scorched ears of grain. And Joseph, because he had this direct line to God, he had God's favor. God favored him in prison. God favored him in Potiphar's house. God favored him when he was a child. His father favored him when he was a child. But even in prison, even when Joseph didn't feel favored, he was favored. God is the what helped give Joseph the dreams of the interpretation of dreams. And he told Pharaoh that both of his dreams signified 7 years of abundance in crops and then followed by 7 years of severe famine in Egypt. And he advises Pharaoh to appoint a wise administrator to store grain up during the 7 years of plenty to prepare for the famine, and impressed with Joseph's wisdom and God's spirit within Joseph, Pharaoh says, hey, are you available, Joseph? Pharaoh appoints Joseph as a second in command over all of Egypt. And he gives Joseph authority to manage the preparations for the famine. Now, what we're seeing is God setting up the stage for Joseph's dreams that he had of authority over his brothers, for his dreams to be fulfilled. And when we see the dreams that we have, the understanding of the prophecies, for instance, the nation of Israel, when we can see Jesus present in his parousia, executing God's strategy for resurrecting the nation of Israel, and we can see the fulfillment of that prophecy, that links us in the spiritual identity of our new creature. And that's what was happening. God was giving Joseph a new identity. And that's how God works with us. He gives us a new spiritual identity with our new creature. So now we're in the time of servanthood, and up step number five. And Joseph served his father. You know, servanthood was Joseph's motivational energy. You ever thought of your motivational energy, where your motivation comes from? Well, Joseph served his father. Joseph was a servant to Potiphar. Joseph served the warden in the prison. Joseph served the butler and the baker. And now Joseph would serve Pharaoh by interpreting his dreams. Now, sometimes when people go to prison, they want to cop this innocent victim story. But Joseph didn't do that. He chose to be intentionally. He chose to be proactive in his efforts to apply the power of God's favor. And that's what we should be. We have God's favor through the justification that Brother Alan Springer talked about in the robe of Christ's righteousness. We should prosecute that in a proactive way, not in pride, but in humility. And the choice was Joseph's and the choice is ours. He adopted the heart of a servant. Now, what Joseph taught us about in his life was that God does the work. God did the work for Joseph. But Joseph responded to that work with motivational energy and with the heart of a servant. And understanding Joseph's faith journey will give us a bird's eye view of our own journey. As we look back and we can see the markers in our own experience, in our life, and say, oh yeah, that was that, this was that, this was where I learned how to become a servant. It gives us a bird's eye view of our faith journey as well as a faith journey of our loved ones, so that we can be a mentor without prejudice. Where's Brother Doctor? But we get to be a mentor and mentor other people without prejudice. You know what that means, Marisha? That means that I get to help you become what you are meant to become in God's power. And all I have to do is teach you the principles, and you get the motivational energy to respond in kind. And that's all you have to do. That's all Joseph did. God called you. God tested you. God let you wrestle with injustice. You apply your faith. You develop a servant's heart. And because of all those difficult steps going through the crucible of God's directive, you learn servanthood in your heart, and it's authentic. And it resonates as genuine, even with your enemies. The next step is step number 6, and that's God's sovereignty in all things. So we're going to read Genesis chapter 42, verses 1 through 9. Genesis chapter 42, verses 1 through 9. Now when Jacob saw that there was corn in Egypt, remember Jacob is Joseph's father. He's back in Canaan with his 11 sons. Now when Jacob saw that there were corn in Egypt, Jacob said unto his sons, you know, why are you standing around looking at each other? Verse 2, and he said, behold, I have heard that there is corn in Egypt. Get you down thither and buy for us from thence that we may live and not die. And Joseph's 10 brethren went down to buy corn in Egypt, but Benjamin, Joseph's brother, Jacob sent not with his brethren, for he said, lest peradventure mischief befall him. And the sons of Israel came to buy corn among those that came from, for the famine was in the land of Canaan. And Joseph was the governor over the land, and he it was that sold to all the people of the land. And Joseph's brethren came and bowed down themselves before him with their faces to the earth. Wow. There's the prophecy that God gave Joseph by dreams. There's the fulfillment of that prophecy. Don't you think that lit Joseph's heart on fire? Joseph was about 35, 37 years old in here, 37, 38. And Joseph saw his brethren, and he knew them, but made himself strange unto them. A little bit about how Clark Kent puts glasses on, and nobody can tell he's Superman. And spake roughly unto them, and he said unto them, whence come ye? And they said, from the land of Canaan to buy food. And Joseph knew his brethren, but they knew not him. And Joseph remembered the dreams which he dreamed of them, and said unto them, you're spies to see the nakedness of the land ye are come. So this was a huge test for Joseph. Joseph could have punished his brothers, but instead he put his brothers on their own faith journey. And he was mentoring them without prejudice. That's the secret. That's the secret of leadership, mentoring somebody without prejudicing them in any way. He tested his brothers. Joseph trusted in God's principles to be a guide, to test his brothers. God was overwatching Joseph, and Joseph recognized God's sovereignty in all things. That's where we're at, step number 6. God's sovereignty in all things. We're going to get there, but we have to go through the difficult experiences sometimes to learn the lessons. So Joseph let his brothers find their own faith through all of these back and forth that he did, and he let that faith be their guide once they found it. He wanted to see which of them would allow that servant's heart to rise up. And as mentors, when we help other people see that and we guide them, and I really think, even though in these difficult experiences, Joseph was being meek and righteous, he was following God's formula. Whether he knew it or not, he was pulling the children of Israel together in a common focus and a common vision that they could have never been pulled to before. And Joseph saw that the difficult experiences that he had was for the purpose of bringing that nation together. Perhaps he knew that it was for the purpose of dispensing the Abrahamic promise. And this experience, it required Joseph to put any fleshly feelings aside and let God have sovereignty in all things. Part of that is not really caring what anybody thinks of you. If you care what people think of you, then you're not letting God have sovereignty in all things. You just have to care what God thinks of you and be guided by his servant, Jesus Christ. And Joseph's unwavering trust in God's sovereignty guided him through uncertainty and led him to victory. Not victory as the world would see it, but his story becomes a beacon of hope. And it reminds us that faith and righteousness can overcome any obstacle. And I really like this scripture in Zephaniah chapter 3, verse 2, I think. And it says, "Seek ye the Lord, all ye meek of the earth, which have wrought judgment." And it says two things: seek meekness and seek righteousness, that it may be ye shall be hid in the day of the Lord's anger. So when is the day of the Lord's anger? Well, it's right now. How do we know that? Well, the very next phrase in verse 3, "For Gaza shall be forsaken." Do you think Gaza's been forsaken? Certainly looks like it. "And Ashkelon a desolation. They shall drive out Ashdod at the noonday." Ashdod is where all the cruise ships park, by the way, when they go to Israel. "And Ekron shall be rooted up." But it's relevant to our day. We see Gaza being destroyed. These are some of the dreams, the prophecies that God has given us that we see, and they encourage us. What Joseph was helping his brothers do is overcome their scarcity mindset. So there's a mindset that their brothers had. When 22 years earlier or 30 years earlier, they saw their father's love for Joseph. They were jealous over it, and they said, "You know what? There's not enough love here for us, so we need to kill Joseph." That's scarcity. Don't ever have that driving your life. Make sure that you live in an abundance mindset, because that's a kingdom view of the world. But Joseph's brothers operated from a scarcity mindset. They were driven by fear and a need for significance. In contrast, through great struggle in his faith journey thus far, Joseph has already developed an abundance mindset. And he recognized God's providence even in adversity. That's the challenge. That's the problem that we need to overcome whenever we feel discouraged. We have to move from that scarcity mindset to that abundance mindset, especially when worldly anxieties kick in. Jesus tells us what to do if we want an abundance mindset. Brother Brian quoted it earlier in the panel. It says, "But seek ye first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and all these things shall be added unto you." That's the challenge, but the reward is out of this world. Now let's go to the refiner's fire. Now, Joseph, in this story, it's in chapter 42, verses 1 through 57. Joseph's administrative work became known by his father, Jacob. Jacob sent his 10 sons to Egypt to get food. Jacob recognizes his brothers, and Joseph recognized his brothers, and Joseph made himself look different. And guess what he does? Guess what Joseph does? He tests his brothers, and what does he use? He uses a false accusation. Now, isn't that interesting? Sounds kind of vindictive. It sounds like a bad strategy. But he uses a false accusation. He says, "Hey, you stole my silver cup. Hey, you did this. Hey, you did that." This was the refiner's fire in my thinking for Joseph's life. Because Joseph had the power. He had total power. But can you see Joseph leading them in meekness and righteousness? Joseph gave them the opportunity to wrestle with injustice, and he knew that he would not know their heart until he saw them wrestle with injustice. And I think he knew, because of his own faith journey, step three, that their internal struggle with injustice and a false accusation would help them find their faith. Do you like that, Sister Sharon? She's smiling. So some of you might think that the refiner's fire part of Joseph's life would be either when he was sold into slavery by his brothers, or the false accusation by Potiphar's wife, false imprisonment, waiting for 2 years for the butler to mention his name. But I chose this point for the refiner's fire stage of Joseph's faith journey, where Joseph would have to wrestle with the temptation of pride in his heart. Have you ever had pride in your heart? Yes, Your Honor, I'm guilty. Joseph was now in the driver's seat as Pharaoh's number two. But this power was a gift from God. And anything you have in this world is a gift from God. Don't forget it. And he's given you gifts of abilities to accumulate things. Could be money, it could be material things. But any power that you received is a gift from God. Don't forget that. And he would have to be intentional. Joseph would have to be intentional about how he would wield that God-given power in the lives of his brothers. And he chose to bring them along, kind of extrude them on their own life journey, following his own template that he was giving. For Joseph, power would be a temptation. He had to resist the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, the pride of life. He had to resist the power of being right. He had to resist the power of being under God's favor. Never mind being Pharaoh's number two. But the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life, these were all sins of his brothers by which he suffered greatly. But Joseph's secret sauce was that he put God in charge of all things in his life. And this is how he was successful in the refiner's fire. And at the same time of putting his brothers on the faith journey, guess what he was doing? He was doing a balancing act. He was orchestrating the administration of the famine in Egypt. Wow, he was doing all that stuff. He must have had ADHD too. But with great power and with God's favor comes responsibility. I stole that from Spider-Man. But by faithfully submitting to the refiner's fire, Joseph became the spiritual father of his brothers. Joseph chose to do justly. Joseph chose to love mercy. He chose to walk humbly with his God. And this is our intent as well. And it's a daily struggle. Can we be successful? Yes. How do we know? John, how do we know we can be successful? It's because Joseph teaches us that we can. And we know that these difficulties on his faith journey, on the road to a legacy of faithfulness, are simply stops along the way. Joseph chose to use his power as Pharaoh's number two and under God's favor to shape the character of his brothers, to mentor them on their own faith journey. But at the same time, God was shaping Joseph and refining his character like gold. Joseph was in the refiner's fire. The next step is step eight, trusting in God's timing. So in this case, the family was out of food. in Canaan, and it's kind of symbolic of how the brothers lacked any spiritual food, in my opinion. And Jacob sent them to Egypt, just like Jacob sent Joseph to Egypt unwittingly several years earlier. So now Egypt would be the brothers' testing ground. And we're going to read Genesis chapter 42, verses 21 through 24. Genesis 42, chapters, verses 21 through 24. And they said one to another, "We are very guilty concerning our brother." Wow. Can you see that? Sometimes when you go to a testing ground, all of the truth comes out. And they said to one another, "We are very guilty concerning our brother, in that we saw the anguish of his soul when he besought us, and we would not hear. Therefore is this distress come upon us." Wow, they connected some dots. Give the boys some credit. And Reuben answered them, saying, "Spake I not to you, saying, do not sin against the child, and ye would not hear? Therefore, behold, also his blood is required." And they knew not that Joseph understood them, for he spake unto them by an interpreter. Wow, Joseph was listening to all this stuff. And guess what? Because he was guided by God, because he was intentional about being in the refiner's fire, because he didn't want to use his power as having God's favor and his power as Pharaoh's number two, he was proceeding and executing his strategy with meekness and righteousness. Joseph saw their repentance and he was moved. Joseph trusted in God's timing. His brothers came together and recognized their sin against him. He had to hide himself because he didn't want them to see him crying. He was a powerful man. Powerful men don't cry in front of slaves or foreigners. But he proceeded as planned, and he put Simeon in prison. I like Brother Jonathan Benson's talk, and I think Joseph showed restraint. Jonathan said that Joseph showed restraint by putting other people first. Brother Jonathan said, and you should listen to his talk if you haven't, but Joseph showed love and mercy even in spite of their betrayal and in spite of his right to punish them harshly. He practiced what Brother Jonathan spoke about as forbearance. So what are the insights we get from this episode? Well, Joseph trusted in God's timing. And Joseph needed to protect his faith by following a righteous and meek path and help his brothers lean into their own faith. You ever think of helping people lean into their faith? That's what Jesus did with Saul of Tarsus on the road to Damascus. He helped Saul of Tarsus lean into his faith. And Joseph orchestrated an elaborate back and forth between his brothers and then his brothers with their father. And it was a shocking back and forth that Joseph used tactics that actually raise your eyebrows. It raises my eyebrows. But what Joseph was doing is he was requiring his brothers to accept and to deal with the lie that they told their father. And Joseph's elaborate process would bring his brothers together in a shared testing ground, shared injustice, shared faith, develop the servant's heart, and come to a realization that God was sovereign and guiding their lives. Do you see the steps that Joseph was prosecuting for his brothers based upon his own life journey? Joseph's patience in waiting for God's timing reveals to us his unwavering faith in God's plan. And God's timing is perfect. God's timing is perfect. Sister Marilyn and I have had some pretty crazy stuff. Look at her. She's got a bobblehead doll going like this up and down. We've had some really interesting experiences. But God's timing is perfect, even when it doesn't align with our own desires. I wonder if Joseph may have heard the story of Abraham and Sarah and how long they had to wait for Isaac, his grandfather. If you're a parent and you have children, tell your stories, children, about your faith and how God pulled you through. One important thing, and I don't know who told me this, it was somebody at the convention, but God's delays are not his denials. Keep praying. Keep asking in righteousness, according to God's will. I'll tell you a quick story. I told you a little bit about my trip to Brazil, and I went there. I think Sister Marilyn was with me, and we were trying to do a public discourse. I gave a public discourse on the chart of the ages, and the venue that was rented for us, it was out of my control, but it was at a karaoke establishment. Names changed to protect the innocent. In the, one of the worst areas of Brazil, in a place called Belford Roxo, R-O-X-O, in a bad part of Rio de Janeiro. So there I was giving this chart talk, and there was one person that showed up, and it was Brother Andre Cosero, and he's turned out to be an awesome brother that we love dearly, and he came up to me and told me that he's a Bible student. He worked in the Bethel house at Sao Paulo for the Jehovah's Witness, and he left, and he was now a Bible student. The next step is step number 9. And we're not going to read Genesis chapter 45, 1 through 15, but that's Genesis 45, verses 1 through 15 for step number 9. But in this case, Joseph reveals himself to his brothers, and it's a tearful moment. He cried so loudly that several Egyptians and Hebrews heard him. Well, Marilyn's seen me cry like a baby. My children have seen me cry like a baby. Other brethren have seen me cry uncontrollably. I was wailing at this. 20 minutes, I couldn't stop crying. But Joseph revealed himself to his brothers, and he was crying really loudly, and several Egyptians and Hebrews overheard him. And you know what Joseph demonstrated by that moment, by that action? He demonstrated mercy. Because I think he was weeping with his brothers. And he was showing empathy for their suffering. He was crying because he was showing empathy for their suffering. Because he knew it. He felt it. It was in his bones. It was now part of his new identity. And he was giving his brothers the same identity that he was given by God. He was crying, and that weeping was so powerful and poignant. But Joseph reassures his brothers that God orchestrated his journey to Egypt. Joseph really gives them a not-so-subtle lifeline of faith. Let's read two verses in 45 verses 10 through 11. It was a lifeline of faith. And thou shalt dwell in the land of Goshen, and thou shalt be near unto me, thou and thy children and thy children's children and the flocks and thy herds and all that thou hast, and there will I nourish thee, for yet there are 5 years of famine, lest thou and thy household and all that thou hast come to poverty. Wow, what a blessing. Oh, the goodness and loving kindness of Jehovah. You know what another word for loving kindness, by the way, is? Mercy. The mercy of Jehovah, the loving kindness of Jehovah. Well, step number 10, the journey to reconciliation. We're going to quickly go through this. It's in chapter 46, verses 1 through 5. God reconciles with Jacob. The sons reconcile with their father. Joseph's children are reconciled with Jacob. And Jacob claims Ephraim and Manasseh, Joseph's children, as his own. Joseph receives a double blessing. Jacob is finally at peace. Joseph is at peace. Pharaoh's at peace. Did you wonder what happened to Potiphar and his wife? Who cares? It doesn't matter. Why? Because Joseph didn't care what they thought about him. So step number 11, the power of redemption. Joseph's faith journey is ultimately a story of promise, and this is chapter 50, verses 15 through 21. It's a story of promise, testing, redemption. It's from slavery to leadership. and it mirrors God's calling and redemptive power in our lives. Do you get that, Bill? Joseph's story is your story. Wherever you are in that circle, you can look forward and backward and mentor somebody without prejudice because you got the key to Joseph's faith journey. And it shows God's sovereignty over all of our experiences. Finally, we get to step 12, a legacy of faithfulness. It serves as an inspiration for all who seek to live a righteous life. And Joseph's faithfulness challenges us to live a life that honors God and leaves a lasting impact on future generations. In this story, the good guys win and the bad guys win. But Joseph exhibited faith and wisdom in overcoming his obstacles. And because of that, he became the spiritual father to his brothers and by extension, the emerging nation of Israel. So in conclusion, Joseph was a philosopher. And Joseph could frame the good and the bad things that happened to him in the larger context of God's plan. Now, you can't do that unless you know God's plan. But Joseph could do it because he knew God's plan. And Joseph shows us that when we gain this clarity, we find it easier to submit to God's sanctifying power. And guess what? We enjoy a peaceful walk with God. This peaceful walk with God comes through submitting to his sanctifying power. The philosophy of understanding the scriptures is more critical than ever. In our evil day, it tackles questions about our identity, about our standing before God. And Joseph's example inspires creativity and a thoughtful integration of our values and how we build our lives and how we build our families. You know, when we talk about the power of God's work and his plan, it's not just bumping our gums and proving to everybody that we know what we're talking about. We have to integrate this in our family's life experience. And if we can't, then we don't really know it. Successful Christian leadership requires alignment of our values into our families. And this is what Joseph did for us. He showed us what he believed. And you young people, whether you're shaping a home or embarking on a career, it's clear that progress is strongest when you're rooted in a purposeful walk with God. Trust in God. Find meaning in all of your joys and sorrows. And let's build our futures in the narrow way with our best efforts. In Joseph's faith journey, we see our faith journey. And we see it with clarity of what lies ahead in our future, what lies in our past, understanding that value of the struggle, and a vision for what we might expect in the future. And as Joseph did with the other prisoners, let us use the lessons from Joseph's faith journey to mentor other people into their faith. But most likely we won't have to show the tough love that Joseph showed his brothers, but maybe we do. Maybe we do. We might have to. But knowing Joseph's faith journey, we will be equipped. We will be equipped. Knowing Joseph's faith journey will equip us to help anyone on their own faith journey to reconciliation, to redemption, and to faithfulness. And may God bless you in that righteous work.